Nice to be on board, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Just be fantastic to talk about your cricket career, because we sort of followed it pretty closely as Coastal opposition, and when you played in Tassie. I mean, where did it all start for you? I can remember spotting you in an A reserve game. I was playing for Devonport and you were playing for Yeoman. It was at the Ulverston High School one day. Where did things all start for you when you picked up a cricket bat?
Well, it started pretty young, mainly. I went to school at Wivenhoe Primary, so we were a very small primary school. So I started playing hockey, cricket and footy in grade one. So it started around 6 years old, mate. So, yeah, so it was a long journey from six to when I finished. So, yeah, it was quite a ride.
Yeah, in the early years, I guess there's always a number of people that you can remember back in your formative years before you perhaps get to high school, even of who sort of influenced you. Who were the main players in your life as a young cricketer?
Yeah, look, it started back with Andrew Kennedy, who was an Englishman who came across and did what is now like the Cricket Tas role in the coaching side of it. He came over for the summer and got involved, and we used to have training at West Park, at where the old Bernie Nets were there.
Mm, yep.
And Andrew was one of my first coaches ever, so I would have been primary school back then, them days, and started. And he sort of started me off and was in charge of the junior side going through from, you know, your under-12s and so forth, and under-14s. He was the first coach I had and the first influence, apart from, of course, Dad and a few other people, but Andrew was the main first coach I had.
And you played a bit of cricket with your dad?
I did. I played a couple of years in the BCL when I was about 13 or 14 there, and a few other wild and wonderful characters, and the great Lawrence China McCall was in amongst that group. Sadly passed away recently. But yeah, China was, and Stephen Beaumont and the Beaumont boys and the Chetlins, so you might say I had a nice little introduction into how to sledge.
I reckon the boys would have been up and about, no doubt about that. Look, who bought you your first bat, or did you just inherit a bat from somewhere else? You made it your own, got the sandpaper out, the old linseed oil?
My first bat was bought by my granddad. So when I was about 7 years old, he bought me one, and then he also bought me another one when I went away the first time with the under-16s for Tassie.
And you represented Tassie. Was that the first time at junior level under-16s? Is that the first time that you represented your state?
Yeah, it was under-16s for the 2 years, and then into the under-19s after that. I think I went away to two of the 3 years. One year things were a bit tight and couldn't afford to go, mate.
Mm. Yeah, I guess that's one of the challenges for families, particularly on the northwest coast. At different times, you may have the ability, but sometimes you just don't have the funds to get there. You played three test matches against a Sri Lankan under 19 team. That must have been a good experience to play test matches.
Yeah, it was amazing. Australian under 19s, and we had a pretty formidable team. We had the two War brothers in there. So they turned out pretty poorly.
Yeah, they weren't too bad.
No, Mark Taylor was there as well, Craig McDermott. There was a couple of others that went on to play a lot of first-class cricket. And on the opposition, there was Aravinda De Silva, Gurasinghe, and Rohan Mahamana, who played. Three played a lot of tests for Sri Lanka. So, yeah, it was amazing. We played at the MCG, Adelaide Oval, which is still my favourite oval in one of the favourites. I always went well at the Wacker, so that's quite right up there. And I think we played, where was the other one? I'm not sure where we played the third test, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, look, that was an amazing experience and something that I've certainly treasured as I've got older.
And we're going to talk about your magnificent grade career a little later, but you debuted for Yeoman in 80-81. What do you remember about that?
Trying to think who I did play my first game against. To be honest, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who the first side that I played against. I got a sneaking suspicion it might have been against Devonport, to be honest.
Yeah, that started the nightmare for us, really.
Well, we had some wonderful battles.
We did.
Journeys. some I come out on top, or Yeoman come out on top, and vice versa. Devonport got the better of us quite regularly as well. So yeah, there were some wonderful battles, especially early in the 80s into the 90s, of course.
Yeah, and look, one particular game there, and as I said, we'll touch a bit more on your grade career, but we've just got to mention this one. You're 291 against Devonport in that 83-84 grand final. That sort of catapulted you into the, I guess, getting there to becoming a Shield regular, didn't it? That was a big breakthrough innings for you. That must have been a pretty exciting time for you.
Yeah, I still remember that. I remember getting out to the third new ball, caught it first slip by Gooders off Trout.
Yep.
For 291. I was looking at 300. I think we scored 580. Doc got 100 as well, big under 130 odd. All because of about half hour of rain, wasn't it, I think, Michael, from memory?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And didn't we feel every second of it? Yeah.
Yeah, so we made every post a winner there. But yeah, look, that was obviously a turning point to score something like that in the grand final. I had a pretty good record in. It was a feast or famine for me in grand finals, either I got lots or I got nothing. I got quite a few ducks over the journey, I must say, in grand finals.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, more success than low scores, and you made the Shield team in 83-84. Did you have many doubts, or were you pretty confident that your game is going to stack up at first class level?
I was pretty young, 18 at the time, so you're bulletproof at 18. You think you're going to set the world on fire, but I soon got come down to earth pretty quickly when I made my debut and played those first two Shield games. The scores were, I think I scored 12 and 6 and 0 and 28. I think they were the... And then it was back to club cricket for a while.
But I guess nine games in two seasons, and then sort of 85-86, the 10 games and over 680-odd runs, and then 529 runs the next season, 579. It was a gradual build for you, Bucky, wasn't it? 87-88, 3 tonnes. So you must have then felt like you were an integral part of the setup by then.
Yeah, I started to sort of come into my own around that time. You get a bit more belief when you start scoring runs consistently. By 87-88, you know, I really felt it part of the setup, because back then it was still all of my career, it was still the three areas that you played in. It was only at the back end of my career that everything sort of went down south. But it was a slow burn, but once you sort of got in there, and I think we got better as a side too as we went along, to the early days. We hadn't been in the Shield very long, and it takes time to sort of develop as a team.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that would disappoint you a little bit was that grand final that you played. You scored a magnificent 155 against Devonport in a grand final, and you're on the cusp of a first Shield final, and then you didn't get selected for that. Is that a little something that sort of niggles away at you, or do you feel, oh well, look, okay, that's life. I just have to move on from it.
Well, I never moved on from it, Michael, because I never played for Tassie again after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, that really burnt. There was some mixed messaging going on. I was told one thing, and then the players were told another thing, and best left alone. I've never really been involved with the setup since then.
Yeah. Yeah, a really difficult time, and you know, there's no need for us to dwell. You mentioned that you love playing at the Wacker, and I'm not sure what you feel your best first class knock was, but that unbeaten 110 against Western Australia in Perth, when Bruce Reid ripped the heart out of Tassie, I think he took 6 for 50 odd. That must be up there.
Yeah, look, any time you played against Queensland, WA, any run scored against them is high up there, and Bruce Reid was obviously a great bowler, and at the Wacker, you know, he's extremely difficult with the extra bounce. But I just found that I probably should have been a Western Australian, I think, and played there, because my record there is second to none, I don't think. I averaged well over 50 at the Wacker, so I just loved it. The bounce is true, good pace. I was a back foot player, as most people know, so it suited me down to the ground.
Yeah. Well, you and punter, Ricky Ponting, like whenever punter was out of form, get to the Wacker, and all of a sudden in one innings he's back in form. He had an amazing record there too, from memory.
Yeah, he was certainly a great player, and enjoyed. He's very similar, loved the ball coming on. I struggled against the slower, low type wicket. I like to as you'd be well aware, I was quite an aggressive player, so I used to like to get on with it and the ball coming onto the bat. So, but that innings was right up there. And I think my last first-class innings was at the Wacker, and I scored 100 in a session. So, I loved it there.
Yeah, and just crazy that as you said, that particular time when you played your last game for Tassie, didn't make the Shield final, is a travesty of justice that not too many people will really be able to understand. Stick with us, Bucky. We've still got plenty to come, and we'll come back after this break. My very special guest on our Where Are They Now is Danny Buckingham. Welcome back to the Sideline View. My special guest on our Where Are They Now segment is Danny Buckingham. Bucky, as I said, you debuted in 80-81. I think, what did it mean for you to play for Yeoman or play club cricket in general? Because I got this feeling that that you were so passionate about representing your club, and you just loved to get back from your state duties and play for Yeoman, Bernie Yeoman, or East Devonport as you played, and you know, you also played for Devonport for a brief period of time. You just loved to get back and play club cricket.
Yeah, sure did. I mean, that's where you start, and you know, that's where you get everything. All your help along the way, and you should never forget where you start. And it's a shame now a lot of the first-class players, you know, just don't get back. Well, they can't get back to play club cricket. It meant the world to me. And, you know, back in the days when it was Yeoman, it was, it was everything. You know, you had your best mates there. And, you know, as I said before, it just meant the world to me to be able to play at the club that I started with, and it meant everything to win finals and just to be a part of it, and socially, and you know, you make lifelong friends within your sporting groups and your sporting clubs, and you know, life goes on from there, really.
And there's no doubt that Yeoman, Burnie, the whole area on the northwest coast, they have dominated coastal cricket, and there's no way to argue that. I think Devonport's a far distant second when you look at that, with the record that that teams have from Yeoman and Burnie and the like. And yes, just certainly some fantastic players from there. In 81-82, in your second year as a 17-year-old, you scored 159 not out against Ulverston in a grand final. Things were really taking shape for you, weren't they? I know we're going back a little bit to go forward, but things were starting to take shape as the young Danny Buckingham finding his way through the system.
Yeah, look, that was the first substantial innings I really had was in the grand final. I'd made a few, you know, mid-30s, 40s, maybe even a couple of 50s from memory, but that was the standout innings, and that really got me on the radar to go further into the first-class scenes. Obviously making runs in the grand final, that sort of stands out, and I think the next year is when I got into the state squad, basically from that, and that was the first year that I played for Tassie. So that was the stepping stone there to get me onto the first class arena.
Look, the thing that always amazed me, you always used to lift playing against the old enemy Devonport, because really we did lock horns quite a bit, Devonport versus Yeoman and etc. But the thing that amazed me was your insatiable appetite for runs. What was the driving force to that mindset to just want to bat for seemingly ever?
I didn't like sitting in the sheds, mate, watching it. Basically, that was part of it, but look, you just want to perform and you just want to do the best you can for your team. And if obviously if I'm scoring runs, it means we're in a wonderful position. And it was all about winning games of cricket and winning finals and premierships. And, you know, that was the main drive, with pride in your own performance, but also the team aspect. If, you know, if we get over the line and win premierships, that's what it's all about, and having a good time along the way.
And I think the thing that I noticed most was your ability to be able to, like Dale Baker does, count how many balls there are to go in the over, have this unique ability to be able to get one off the last over to maintain the strike, but also to look around the field and be able to plonk a ball into a gap which caused opposition captains to be a nightmare. Just reading the game, you obviously sort of looked at the ground, looked at the positioning and thought, well, if I chip this one over here, they've not got a man there, just to be able to plan your innings like that.
Yeah, it was about maintaining strike and rotating it, but I always looked where the fielders weren't. Like a lot of players, I think, look where the fielders are, and subconsciously you're more likely to hit the fielder, whereas I looked at gaps and then looked to hit it to the gaps or through the gaps. But it was about rotating the strike, and I spent a lot of time, obviously, batting with Bake, and we were both very good at rotating the strike. And the thing about rotating the strike is you're not giving the bowlers a chance to bowl at you. Seven, you know, six balls, two overs or whatever. You know, and nothing more frustrating for a bowler is you're getting off strike every ball or every second ball or every third ball because they can't work to a plan to try and get you out. So, and not only with Bake, but Doc as well. Doc was more flamboyant and give it a bit of a whack, whereas I was more sit in and, you know, I'd take you for three singles. Doc would be more likely to take you for three boundaries.
Yeah, you were a bit more calculated, in other words, and Doc was just, in awe of Trevor Docking as an opponent, but just as a cricketer. Was we touched on the double century in that grand final, and it was a nightmare to bowl to the pair of you, and et cetera. But Doc got 137, as you mentioned, 130-odd, but was Doc the best that you played with as a batter in coastal cricket, or is there a couple of others that you think, you know, they're up there?
Yeah, look, Bate's probably longevity and ability to never play for Tassie, which still sits, and I'm still amazed that he never played for Tassie with some of the players that played in front of him. Doc was the hardest hitter I've seen of a cricket ball, to be honest, apart from Brian Davidson, as we know, who is the most powerful man I've ever come across. Mm. But Doc was just, he had an eye like a dead fish, like he could just seriously just hit a big ball and, you know, he could just tear a side apart. Like, and it was so much easier for me at the other end. Like, I'd just knock it around and let Doc and Bake was a bit the same. Bake hit the ball quite hard and scored quite quickly, whereas, you know, Bake could probably score 100 off 120, 30 balls, whereas I'd score 100 off 200 balls.
Yep.
You know, but I took pride. I didn't like to give me wicket away. So,
no.
You know, like, you had to... To get me out, you had to work bloody hard to get me out. Excuse the French, but you know, it was pride in not letting bowlers knock me over.
And that's the way it should be. That's the way any young cricketer coming into the game these days has to look at it and to say, to put some, with this 2020 stuff and all that sort of thing, I think that's been a bit lost, Bucky, with the 2020 guys get into the longer form of the game and they see what these guys are doing in 2020 and they want to score 100 off 80 in a first-class game. And that's creeping in a bit, isn't it?
It is. I'm not a huge fan of 2020. I probably would have went a ride at it, but I just think it just doesn't teach anything apart from how to hit the ball. Like, technically, I don't even think, not that I've been the know now, but how players are coached, but my understanding is it's more see ball, hit ball, instead of being able to defend. And I think that shows through now into the Australian side with, you get them overseas in England and they're all at sea because the ball swings and turns. And they're not used to it. They don't know how to play it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you always say back in when I was playing, you know, blokes were far more technically sound. You know, like guys could bat for an hour and score five runs, but work through a period of where a bowler was dominant and get through it and come out the other end and then go on and score runs. Whereas I don't see that with any player these days. It's all, if you can bowl, you know, three or four overs at a bloke and keep them restricted, every chance you're going to knock them over because they're going to play a big shot.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's right. And, cricket's got to fix that up. I mean, now, just a quick one. Which bowler gave you the most trouble? Let's talk first-class cricket. I think you mentioned Bruce Reid was outstanding. There must have been some others, both in first-class cricket and club cricket. Who were the bowlers that caused you the most grief?
When I went to Sydney, mate, on those turning tracks, I just never scored runs in Sydney. At the SCG, my high score was about 40, I think, from memory. So the spinners had the wood over me there. Greg Matthews used to just get me out for fun, I think, at times. Like at the SCG, he'd toss me up something nice and juicy and I'd knock it away for four and then all of a sudden you're back in the shed sitting down. But look, we had some wonderful bowlers back in that era, like Craig McDermott, Merv, Bruce Reid, Terry Alderman, early days, who, you know, at the Wacker was more than a handful with his outswing and just his immaculate line and length. He just never gave you anything. It was just quite amazing how good a bowler he was. But locally, we had some good stouts with, obviously, Trouty. Craig Boucher always, you know, was lion-hearted and always put in and always worked hard. Alan Stimson, when he first...
Yep.
When in my early days, and the very first season that I played Bishan Bedi when he was at Latrobe.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. Like, he was, I seriously had no idea how to play him. And so over the journeys, there's been quite a few, you know, and it was always, there was always someone that would test you. And, you know, we had some wonderful overseas guys come. Tony Murphy, when he was at Ulverston, was an outstanding bowler, and, yeah, so there were some good tussles along the way, and hopefully think that I might have won most of them.
I reckon you did, mate. And just finally, you umpired first grade cricket too for a little while. How did you find being in position and in charge of a game as an umpire? Did you see the game a little differently?
You certainly do. It's a little bit more. Interesting, is the word I'm looking for. I enjoyed it. Certainly enjoyed the one day stuff and getting to umpire against the guys from Longing in the Greater Northern comp. The two day game after Christmas tended to drag on just locally, and that's probably why I gave it away. It was just the standard's probably not there, but I think the standard of all sport along the coast and participation's sadly on the decline, and I don't know what the future holds, to be perfectly honest. In all sports, it's pretty sad. So, but yeah, look, the umpiring, I got talked into it by Hutto. And he just asked me, I ran into him, he said, what are you doing? I said, oh, not much. He said, do you want umpiring? Well, I don't know about that. But then he talked me into it, and I really did enjoy it. I think I might have done it 3 or 4 years or 3 or 4 seasons. I had a couple of years and then had a year break and then went back. But yeah, really enjoyed it. And you do get a different perspective when you're playing, especially some of the sledging. It was like, seriously?
Yeah, like, some good stuff happened.
Oh, absolutely. Not as good as what it was back when we were going at each other.
No, that's true.
It used to be great fun.
Yeah. Oh, look, and the thing was that... M. Maney, D. Buckingham, D. Baker, D. Mullet, all at the bar, have a drink and talk about the battle that we had. And sometimes I think that's a little bit lost. And we used to have the umpires that used to come in and have a beer too, and I think that a little bit of that has disappeared from the game, which is a bit sad because, that was part of cricket that I really enjoyed.
Well, that was the best part, wasn't it? Yeah. After you go hard at each other on the field and you'd have a beer in the bar afterwards and dribble some rubbish and but it was about the whole aspect of the game and just the friends that you made, not only within your own team but along the coast with other clubs as well. You know, we all went hard at each other, but at the end of the day, as you said, you sit in the bar and have a beer and talk about it, and that's what I found when I umpired. Like, being myself, I'm quite partial to a lemonade, and would go in after the day's play after a quick shower, and you'd be the only one in there. The players hadn't even got in there, and you're thinking, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But when I first got into it, but I think that's a lost art, and that's also been lost at first class level too. I'd hate to play now. You just play and go back to your hotel and drink water and have ice baths. What's that rubbish? the ice baths we used to have with a lazy six-pack of cold buns and have a good chat with the opposition, and you got to know each other. Whereas now, it just doesn't happen, and that's a sad fact, unfortunately.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So it seems staggering, Bucky, that you scored 9,658 runs at 54.26, the fifth all-time leading run scorer in NWTCA Cricket Northwest history, and you would have missed so many games. games. If you'd have been playing, I guess when you're as good as you were, you end up playing first class cricket. But that is amazing. Cricket Northwest Merit Award 2000, Cricket Hall of Fame inductee 2009, and won multiple batting averages in the NWTCA. Just a staggeringly outstanding career on the other side. Even to watch your bat, it was a pleasure to watch, and sometimes you just have to stand back and admire it. So brilliant that you could come on, have a chat about cricket. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat, and well played. Outstanding career by a Tasmanian cricketer, but it's been brilliant to catch up with you, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much for your time. It's been enjoyable going down memory lane. I don't think too much about the past, but it's nice to have those things said about you. Thank you.